Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Faces of TBI podcast series, the number one podcast for brain injury and concussion resources. I am Amy Zellmer, founder of facesoftbi.com and your host. Today we'll be talking about the silent contributor, uncovering non-neurological aspects of TBI with Dr. Mike Hennis. Hello, I am Amy Zellmer, and you're listening to Faces of TBI, a podcast series for survivors by survivors, raising awareness about traumatic brain injury, one podcast at a time. Those of you who might not know who I am a TBI survivor from a fall on the ice in February of 2014. I am a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Thrive Global, and the Goodman Project, and I am author of Life with a Traumatic Brain Injury, Finding the Road Back to Normal, available on Amazon. You can learn more about me and the podcast at facesoftbi.com, and you can follow me on Instagram at Amy Zellmer. And I invite you to join my private Facebook group, Amy's TBI Tribe, to connect with other survivors, caregivers, and loved ones. Today's guest, we have Dr. Michael Hennis, and he is a doctor of chiropractic and a board-certified chiropractic neurologist at the Neural Connection. Specializing in neurological rehabilitation and nutrition, Dr. Hennis focuses on traumatic brain injury, concussion, vestibular disorders, and migraine. He actively participates in the Minnesota Chiropractic Association Sports Council, providing sideline care and legislative advocacy. In his free time, Dr. Hennis is an enthusiastic DIYer, particularly in woodworking. He also enjoys traveling, exploring foreign languages, and learning about wine and cherishing his family time. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Hennis. So happy to have you here.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So today we're talking about the silent contributor, uncovering non-neurological aspects of TBI. I think first I would love for you to share with our listeners a little bit about who you are and how you came to work specifically with TBI people. What led you here?
First disclaimer is I'm actually sitting out in my truck in my parking lot, which it's raining and apparently thundering today. So if you hear that's why.
Too.
But we got a lot of stuff going on in the office. So I thought the car was going to be a better option, but maybe not. That's all a great question. My history with TBIs, namely concussions, started really early on. I played contact sports and all that stuff as a kid. But at that time, it was still, good play. Get back in there, walk it off, and you'll be fine. Sit the game if you have to. And I didn't know any better. And it never really dawned on me that maybe I had some other injuries until I started studying neurology and neurology rehab. And I thought, I don't remember being such an ornery kid. You know, teenagers are ornery, but I got a little extra ornery after that, and all of that stuff. So really this started in high school. I knew I was going to go into healthcare. And then through college kind of went through a gamut of, am I going to be a chiropractor? Am I going to be a medical doctor? Am I going to be a kind of an in-between and be a DO? Don't tell the DOs I said that. They don't like it. And ultimately I settled on chiropractic school, and the short version of that story is I ended up in functional neurology because that's just how my brain works, is when you do some kind of physical modality, whether it's an adjustment or a muscle stretch or work on a balance exercise, what does that do to the brain and how does that help the body fix itself? But more importantly for me, it was if you do something and it goes poorly, how do you understand how to keep that from happening so that you can better assist your patients? So that's kind of how I got into neurology. And really the culmination of the two things together was, a concussion or a brain injury is really the ultimate functional injury, the thing you can't see on a scan. You can't necessarily see pieces of it on lab work. And so that got super interesting to me. And then dealing with my own symptoms, trying to figure those things out. So that's kind of how I circled around into that. And then a couple years into practice, I decided, well, I've got to get into this, the functional medicine aspect of things too, because I'm finding I feel like I'm doing good rehab, or, you know, at the time what you think is good rehab. Obviously you look back on your past and think, man, I could have been doing so much better, but you do what you can with what you have. And I decided I had to get into the functional medicine aspect of stuff too, because I was finding too many patients that I was doing the right rehab, but they still weren't getting better, only because their system wasn't in a spot to do that rehab. So that kind of brings us through today. And now we approach it all, doing it all at the same time, where we're looking at functional medicine, we're looking at rehab, we're looking at lifestyle aspects of things. And I think that kind of comes into today is those silent contributors to TBI that you don't necessarily think of, or that your providers don't necessarily address. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at today.
All right. So now we know a little bit about where you're coming from and how you got here. I would love for you, so diving into our topic today, you know, uncovering the non-neurological aspects of TBI. What does that mean to you?
Sure. So some of these things are truly non-neurological, and others aren't on the surface, but they have links and connections to the brain and the neurology and stuff like that. So basically, to me, this is anything that doesn't happen as a direct result of a brain injury, with exception of the gut. We'll kind of dig into that a little bit. But stuff that is more system-based, so either because of the way medicine works in today's world, our social relationships, or just stuff like that. So not necessarily a symptom that you're having or a consequence of your brain not working because of an injury, things that happen regardless of those consequences. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go.
So the first thing here is the first thing I want to talk about is gaslighting, and gaslighting is huge. Mm-hmm. And if for people, I was a lot older than I would like to admit when I finally realized what gaslighting actually was. Gaslighting is basically you are delivering your truth as you see it, and someone telling you that you're crazy for thinking that way, or agreeing to something and then being told that that's not the way it happens. So that's gaslighting. So the way this happens in the medical world, I shouldn't word it that way, but anyway, the way this happens is basically you go in with a set of symptoms and you're told, well, that doesn't make sense, so it must be in your head, right? You're getting degraded based on what you're experiencing. And what's really interesting about the brain, whatever your brain perceives is real to you. It does not matter, right? We can go stick an electric probe on your visual cortex. You will see things. Do they really exist in the world? No, they don't, but to you, they are very real. And so to be told that your experience is not authentic is very degrading, and really starts to make you wonder if that's really, really what's happening. You know, this is the doctor. They've got the degrees. They know all the stuff. They see all the concussion cases. They see all the brain injury. They must know what's happening. But the truth is they don't know what's happening in you. And if I ever pretend to know exactly what's happening in you, it's only from an empathetic standpoint, right? I don't truly know what your experience is. I can't. It's not possible. I can relate it to my experience. I can relate it to the patients I've seen, but we never really know. So I guess as far as silent contributors go, this one's not so silent, but it's something that people are going to deal with, especially, I think, later in your recovery when, say, any physical damage that you've had, right? If you hit your head or your face or a car accident or something, once the bruising is gone, once the scars have healed, once you don't look ill anymore, that's when we really start to see these things, because it's just hard to relate, even in the community of people that treat these things. So gaslighting is the first thing that I think we get into. And that about sums that up. Amy, I think you've had a decent amount of experience with that. I think you just posted about it recently, actually.
Yeah. I actually posted a couple different reels, you know, trying just to, like, poke fun at it. But it's very real. And, you know, in the one, well, on both of them, both doctors tried to put me on antidepressants. And I was like, how's this going to help my brain injury? And they're like, oh, no, no, you just have depression. We just need to, like, get that under control. And I'm like,
yeah.
Like, they know that because they're the doctor.
Exactly. And they can be great because if you've got a connection thing, well, you know, maybe a little antidepressant medication gets those things firing and then we can rehab through it and it's great. But if it's just, well, I don't really know what's going on, so you must be depressed. Well, that's not so useful.
Yep.
Useful either.
Yep.
Yeah. Another aspect that I think doesn't get talked about a lot in brain injury, and regardless of the type of brain injury, whether it's a concussion, and not to belittle concussions at all, or a severe penetrating brain injury, is the financial aspects of it. It doesn't get talked about. It doesn't get covered very well from insurance, especially if you don't have the good diagnostic tests and the good insurance and the doctors that are going to say, yes, this is a chronic ongoing thing. Or even if you follow current research, still says most concussions fix themselves in 2 weeks. But then new research will say, well, they fix themselves in 2 weeks, but 90% of people still have headaches at 6 months. Well, which is it, right? They either fix itself or the symptoms are still there. You can't have it both ways. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
So, again, that kind of falls into gaslighting and whatnot. So finances are hard. Concussions take longer to fix than you would think, and brain injury as a whole. There's a myriad of providers that you'll probably need to see. And it's a lot of appointments. It becomes a part-time, if not a full-time job. If you have high deductibles, a lot of that cost ends up being out of pocket if it's covered at all. So that can be a big piece and a big stressor on your system, whether it's you, your family, or the people around you, your job, all of those things. So I hate to say I'm a little bit full of doom and gloom today, but I think it's important that we talk about stuff like this and,
yeah.
and kind of – you know, at least acknowledge that it's part of the scenario. But next, I think I've got a couple of things written down here, but I think I want to dive into psychology because, Amy, you already brought it up with the antidepressants. There's a huge psychology aspect to this stuff, and there's a couple of different avenues to it. This gets into a little bit of that overlap with the neurology. So we know that if you have depression, that there's inflammation of the brain. Well, what is a brain injury? Truly, it's an inflammatory injury, regardless, again, of penetrating or not, or mild traumatic where you've got a concussion. You will get depression based off of the inflammatory cascade that happens. So it's supposed to be there, more or less. Do we want it to go away? Absolutely. Should we be giving antidepressants for an inflammatory-based condition? I would argue no. We should be giving you anti-inflammatories instead. We should be looking at controlling blood sugar. Make sure your cortisol is good. Make sure you're regulating your hormones. Make sure you can break down that inflammation in the system. That's exactly what we do in our office, and some of that takes lab work. Some of it is, I hate to say educated guessing, but we'll say experienced guessing based on the pathophysiology of what happens. We know it happens, and we can work through some of those things. Other aspects in psychology are things like anxiety. If you let's take a typical sports example of a concussion. If you play football and you got tackled, and every time, say, you go back to play and you're worried about that injury because it took you out for 6 weeks, are you really going to play as hard as you used to? Are you worried about getting hit again? You know, that changes your actions. If we look at the adult world, if you drive for a living or you sustained your brain injury in a car accident, do you avoid that intersection? Do you avoid highways altogether? Do you not drive anymore because you're too afraid of that injury, right? Whether it's PTSD or anxiety, those things are very real. I will be the first to admit that I am not qualified to work through those things. We do find that people that are doing therapy along with neuro rehab, they tend to recover a little bit faster only because they're going through the talk therapy or the EMDR or whatever they are working on that psychological issue. But then we're also working on those neurological pathways that aren't making the appropriate connections, so we can see those things kind of move along a little bit faster.
Yeah, and I would just love to add one thing on the psychology spectrum of it. And you know, when I was being told I was just depressed, I mean, I had some depression, but for me, it was situational depression. Like, I was depressed because I couldn't do things because of the brain injury, right? Like, it wasn't that I was chronically depressed or clinically depressed. The depression I did have was a direct result of the TBI. And so therefore, you know, the antidepressants wouldn't have been right for me anyway. And a doctor should spend more time digging into that before just so casually prescribing that. Like, I felt it very irresponsible for both of those doctors. And when you are put on an antidepressant, you need to be monitored. And that was not the objective with these doctors. It was like, come back in 6 months. And you need to be monitored, especially in those first couple months. You have to be monitored more closely to make sure that that prescription is the right dosage. And, I mean, there's just so much more involved with giving an antidepressant than just writing a prescription and coming back in 6 months. So doctors
absolutely
need to be better.
The chemicals that end up getting used is, yes, they help regulate mood and control and things that are, you know, do you feel happy? Do you feel sad? But they also work on impulsiveness.
Right.
So now if you're depressed and you're having less than savvy thoughts and all of a sudden you're very impulsive, well, this is a very bad combination, especially if you live alone or you don't have people around you or you're not being medically monitored or you don't have the tools to deal with those things, then that can be very bad. And I think
you're almost making it worse.
Yeah, exactly. Another aspect that I think gets overlooked is the psychosocial aspect. And this kind of goes into depression and anxiety. And like you said, Amy, a lot of it ends up being more situational. It's very rare in our office that a patient doesn't cry at least once. And the reason for that is they'll have very good days and then they'll have a setback. Maybe they had a 3-hour marathon meeting at work or they had to go on a long drive and their symptoms flared up and they had a setback. Whatever it is, it's just the, you know, par for the course for care. You have good days, you have bad days. And that's what it is. But at that point, there's usually an emotional, am I going to be this way forever? Is this always going to be
yes.
my new world? And sometimes
yes.
it is, and that's a difficult conversation, but other times it's, well, no, you went on a road trip this weekend, so you were in a car for 8 hours, and you ate like
mm-hmm.
garbage, and you didn't sleep, and so your brain said, no, this is your brain telling you to slow the heck down, and we'll figure it out as we go. But with the psychosocial aspect is people don't get it, right? We've kind of alluded to this as
yeah.
we went here. They can't see it. They can't feel it. If they tell you they can feel it, they either have gone through their own injury, but remember, each injury is unique. So anybody can have identical brain injuries and have totally different symptoms based on where the brain actually fails. And that's hard, right? And it's one thing if it's your coworkers that don't get it because maybe you're close with them, but you're not so close, or your boss doesn't get it. And yes, this has consequences on your life because you may lose your job. You may have to cut hours. You may have to switch jobs already. And then do you tell your new employer that you're going through this or not? There's legal ramifications for that. So
mm-hmm.
obviously, you know, consult an attorney or work with your Brain Injury Alliance. I believe most states have one, and if not, there's a conglomerate like out in New England and all of that, and they have resources for you. But it's one thing, again, coworkers, boss, but if your friends don't get it, right, are they truly your friends? Are they more superficial friends? Or are they just, you know, getting fed up with you because you look fine and you're not coming out anymore
mm-hmm.
because you can't handle the loud music or, you know, you can't handle alcohol so you don't go to happy hour, whatever it is. And that starts to hurt a little bit more. But even more so is your family, right? You look fine. Why are you still going to these appointments? Why are you still not sleeping? Why are
yep.
you still complaining of these headaches? You look fine. And family doesn't get it, even if they were, you know, in the car with you when you got in that car accident, right? Maybe they didn't get injured because their brain was in a better spot. Maybe the physics of the accident didn't allow them to get injured, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But this starts to impact your sense of self-worth because you start to basically gaslight yourself. You think, well, is this real? Maybe they're right. Maybe I'm not going through this. And so that delves all the way back into the psychology. So all of this stuff starts to loop, and you have to remind yourself that there's going to be good days and bad, and that you're working on yourself, and you really kind of have to develop a tough skin. The patients in our office that do the best are the ones that are optimistic from the get-go, no matter how icky they feel when they come in, right? If they've got mild lingering headaches from a skiing accident 10 years ago, but they've had it for 10 years and they just think this is the way it is, rehab is an uphill battle. The people that got injured 2 weeks ago and they're like, I'm not taking this lying down, we're going to go for it, they're highly motivated, they're going to do a lot better, even though the rehab in those early stages, in my opinion, is actually harder because we're still dealing with the inflammation. Whereas the old injury, it should be easy to knock out, but they've convinced themselves that this is the way it is, and rehab, they know they need to do it, but they're not bought in. That's a tough conversation to have. So that sense of self-worth, that sense of what's possible for you can really be skewed. And you know, we all have to overcome that. I still deal with some of that from injuries that I have, but I have to remind myself that, you know, maybe this is that, and maybe I'm using my past injuries as something to blame it on too. But at the same time, I think that's okay because you just use it as motivation.
Right. And it really is hard when friends and family members, you know, I experienced that. I had people telling me, it's been 6 weeks. I don't understand what the big deal is. It's just a concussion. And it's like you can tell clearly they've never, gosh, I mean, Hollywood has not done us any favors, nor has the NFL. You know, we see players getting back on the field the next week, or in movies and TV shows, they're pretty much fine, right, in the next episode.
Right.
And so, like, it has not done us any favors because people think that this is actually how people recover, and in reality, it's not even close to that for most of us.
Right, yeah, you watch your typical action movie and there's a huge blast injury and everybody gets up and runs a marathon afterwards. It doesn't really work that way.
Yep.
Especially if you're having delayed symptoms. Concussions are notorious for people feeling dazed and then fine, and then a week later, that's when the symptoms come up. Well, you know, by that time, most of the people have forgotten about the initial injury and they just think, well, Amy's going a little crazy today. I don't really know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that can make it difficult as well. The last two I have are a little more on the physical side, and I think this is where the neurology starts to overlap a little bit. But in healthcare, the way everything is siloed today, specialists don't talk to one another. We think they do, but really they don't. I actually had to eat my words the other day. I had a patient convince her neurologist to give me a call. And let me tell you, that is the first time I have received a phone call from a neurologist in 10 years. So it's not like I'm crazy because I used to try and get on the phone with people and coordinate care, and everyone does what they do. They don't really care what anybody else is doing. And it's really hard to get people to communicate. So when you have symptoms that are crossing multiple systems, you're having neurological symptoms, you're having psychological symptoms, you're having pain, you're having gut issues, all of those things can make it difficult to coordinate that stuff together. And gut issues in particular follow brain injuries around only because your gut is a consequence of your brain health. Are you able to stimulate your gut motility? Can you move stuff through? Can you maintain your barriers? Are you getting good vagus nerve tone? Are you getting good information back to your brain? This could be a podcast in itself, but we'll see things that start to break down either because diet is going poorly, the brain can't control these things, and not addressing those, especially in chronic injuries, is a good way to do a lot of rehab without making a lot of progress. So that is one thing that I think gets overlooked in brain injury recovery a lot is just general gut health. And like I said, that's a loaded conversation that in a podcast like this, it would have to be its own episode or even its own series. And Amy, I think you've got a couple of episodes on this from past guests. I think even we dove into it last time I was here too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's something that we can't skip over, but we have to find a whole bunch more information on that as well.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, you know, there's over 250 episodes in the archives. And so, I'm sure you can find things on it. So definitely take some time and go back and look through all the archives of the podcast.
Absolutely. The last thing I have is actually physical trauma. And as silly as it seems, because we talk about the injuries that we have, especially if there's outward signs that an injury occurred. So if we take something like a car accident, did you hit the airbag? Do you have bruising on your face or stuff like that? And I know I'm guilty of this, especially early on, as I get so fixated on the neurology because I feel like that's my job and that's the thing that makes me excited, that we overlook something like a chronic whiplash injury. Well, did you ever have that stuff taken care of, right?
Right.
You get hung up on the neurology, but do you have a neck injury? Do you have, did you have a skull fracture? Do you have pain where that stuff is healing? Do you have scar-related pain? And basically physical trauma. Do you have internal damage? Did your body get jolted enough that you have, say, spleen damage or a broken rib or something like that that's causing you pain but no one's really addressing? So this isn't necessarily a silent contributor to a TBI, but it's not gonna be on the radar of your neurologist either.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want your neurologist dealing with your whiplash injury. That's going to be more physical therapy. Vestibular therapy can be great for whiplash. Chiropractic care, functional neurology, I mean, you name it, there's any number of people that can deal with a whiplash much better than, say, a neurologist will. I've had a lot of patients with whiplash end up with Botox, and that is kind of counterintuitive because you're now disabling a muscle that wasn't firing appropriately and wasn't stable to begin with, and now it's even less stable because it's not firing. And that's not the neurologist's fault. That's the tool they have. But there are so many other tools that we should look at first. So it's not being afraid to find multiple practitioners. Like I said, this can become a part-time, if not a full-time job, to recover. But that's what
right?
we need to do in order to get to all the different practitioners, right? And that can make it hard. But not skipping over some of those physical injuries is really, really one of the things that I've been diving into in my practice lately is making sure that we're not skipping over those things just because they're there for the neurological things that I do. If I can work on those things in my office while we're working on the brain, great. If I can't, I have a great referral network of physical therapists and chiropractors and acupuncturists and biofeedback and you name it. And that's what they're good at and that's what they love to do. But we have to get in and work on those things as well.
And talking about whiplash and the neurologist, my first visit to the neurologist, I mean, she did order an MRI, which obviously, you know, showed nothing. But she was so concerned about my whiplash, which I found fascinating because, like, she's a neurologist, which you don't really equate whiplash to neurology. You normally would think orthopedic or chiropractic. And she wanted to do Botox. And I believe, as you know, I was previously married to a chiropractor. And so I knew that wasn't the answer. I was like, no, I would like to fix my neck, not just inject poison into my body. So I had don't get me wrong. I still deal with it. 'Cause I have bulging discs now in C5, 4, and 3, I believe. So I still deal with a lot of pain there. But I still haven't gotten to the point where I want to try Botox. So, I do a lot of alternative healing. I do chiropractic. I do Grafton. I do cupping. Acupuncture, I also want to, you mentioned a few tips back. You mentioned about flare-ups, and we all have flare-ups, right? I'm 10 years out, and I just came to see you 6 months ago because I was having dizziness, and which as quickly as it came on, it left. So I don't quite know what that was about. But, you know, here I am 10 years later, and all of a sudden I had some dizziness going on again. So don't get discouraged when you have a flare-up because, you know, it's natural. You know, as much as it sucks that these things stick around in our bodies, you know, it sometimes tells you when you've done too much. Like, I still get fatigued easier than I used to, and part of that might just be age, right? I'm 10 years older. But don't let it, don't beat yourself up over it when you have a flare-up. And sometimes a flare-up might take you out. Like that dizziness stuck around, I don't know, a month and a half, and then it was just gone. Like, I still don't know what the heck that was all about. But yeah, like, just don't let it discourage you.
I think if we distill flare-ups down, I like to draw an analogy, and this isn't a perfect analogy, but we're coming into spring. It's about to be allergy season. Allergies get really bad in the spring and fall. If you have allergies, right, you have flare-ups in the spring and fall every year, and you don't bat an eye at it. You just say, it's out of my control. The trees are creating pollen. The mold is coming out from under the snow. You know, the leaves are drying out in the fall, and all of that's getting dusty. You don't think anything about it. Flare-ups are part of conditions. Would you have these symptoms regardless of a brain injury history or not? Maybe you would, but because you had that precipitating factor 10 years ago where you slipped and fell on the ice, everything is because of the brain injury, right? Whether it is or not, would you have been dizzy 6 months ago without that brain injury? Maybe, right? If you had some viral infection of the vestibular nerve, it would come and go. We'd never know why, and you'd be dizzy. Did you need a brain injury for that? No, you didn't. You could have had that anyway. And this isn't me trying to belittle brain injury or, you know, I'm not trying to gaslight people right after I just talked about it. But there are things that, you know, we might draw a conclusion that's not entirely true, but we get down on ourselves. Oh, man, I had that brain injury. I'm still dealing with this 10 years later. Maybe you got in another car accident. You didn't get a brain injury, and you have a new whiplash injury that we never took care of. The fact of the matter is that it's here. We have to deal with it. It doesn't really matter what the cause was. We just have to take it head on and go for it, right? It's not good or bad. It just is. It's our reality that we have to deal with.
Yes.
And so not getting down on yourself because of those things.
And not everything is also because of your brain injury. I know people keep blaming everything on their brain injury. And like you just said, would this have maybe happened to you without it? Like, I think that dizzy because you couldn't find anything. Like, you did all the tests. And I thought maybe it was just positional vertigo. But it just poof went away. But I had been very congested. Like, I think I had some allergies going on. Like, was it just enough to inflame my ear canal or, you know, whatever? Like, I was worried I did something, right? Because, I mean, how often do we bump our heads or, you know, like, I'm notorious for falling. I like to trip and fall. That can stop any day. And again, my friends immediately think I fell because of my brain injury. And it's like, nope, I missed the top step. That's why I fell, you know, like, you know, so stop blaming everything on your brain injury. It's not helpful to healing to just blame everything on your brain injury.
There's a quote that I just heard from a consultant. He works in business consulting, Taylor Welsh. She has a couple of podcasts out, but he's basically quoted for saying, and this is about self-talk, is there utility to this? Where if you're getting down on yourself, is that motivational to you, or are you just making yourself feel bad? So same sort of thing. Are we blaming this on our concussion? Is that useful? I shouldn't say concussion. Are we blaming this on our brain injury? I see mostly concussions. That's why I say concussion all the time. But is it useful to blame our injury? If it's not, and we're just going to treat it anyway, it doesn't really matter what it comes from. You're going to treat it anyway. So you know, let's not play the blame game. Do I write in my notes that possibly from a concussion, possibly from a road trip, possibly from, sure, we have to make some, draw some conclusions of possible causes, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, especially in a case like yours, Andy, where it's 10 years ago. You know, is it a sequelae of the brain injury? Sure, maybe. Does it really matter? Are we going to do vestibular rehab anyway? Yeah, we are. So that's what really matters, is that we found out what broke down and we do something about it. And if we can't find something and it's spontaneously resolved, okay, well, there's only a couple things that do that. Blood flow, viruses, blood sugar, maybe they resolve themselves. I don't know.
Well, this is all such good info. I always enjoy having you here, Dr. Hennis. But we're just about out of time, so I want to make sure we mention how people can find you. Your website is theneuralconnection.com. Wherever you're listening, click to the show notes. We have a link in the show notes. But tell us, you offer a free consultation, correct?
Yeah, so one of the things we found is it's best to talk to us first, because it lets us figure out, are you in a spot that we can help you? Are you the right fit for our practice, and are we the right fit for you? Some of that's personality-driven. Some of it is location-driven. If you're not willing to do a bunch of rehab and pick apart your diet, then I'm probably not the practice. So it's important for us to figure that out, because I need my patients to succeed. And if I'm not going to be the right practice, then we're both going to be frustrated. And that doesn't work very well. I can do the best rehab in the world, but if you and I just don't get along, then that's not useful. Maybe one of my practice partners is a better option, or another provider, another office altogether. And that's kind of what we try and figure out, is what's going on. Is it something I think I can help to begin with? And then are we a good fit? And we go over all of that. I try and do virtual meetings because I like to see people. I think it's just a better connection, but obviously phone calls work. We've done some of it over text message, but like I said, I prefer that virtual call. And like you said, we've got theneuralconnection.com, and I don't know, we're on all the socials somewhere or another. If you typed in my last name, Dr. Hennis, I'll show up. I'm pretty prolific online. So I'm pretty easy to find.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Hennis, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you. You are my go-to when I'm having a flare-up. So I'm glad you're right in my neck of the woods here in Minnesota.
Well, I appreciate the invite, and absolutely.
Wonderful. And thank you again for being here. And thank you, everyone, for listening. I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Just a reminder, you can find previous episodes on most streaming platforms, such as iTunes or Spotify, or you can find them directly at facesoftbi.com. And you can follow me on Instagram at Amy Zellmer. And just another reminder to join us on Facebook, Amy's TBI Tribe. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being a part of my journey. Have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you in the next episode.